This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Up West Arts, presenting Scottish fiddler Alistair Fraser and cellist Natalie Haas in their first Portland concert, Saturday, January 28th at the Aladdin Theatre. This all-ages show starts at 8 p.m. and tickets are available at the Aladdin box office or Ticketmaster 503-224-4400 or at Ticketmaster.com. More information at upwest@olympus.net.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea. Introducing Pete's E-Cups, letting you send a warm gesture that says a lot. On the web at Pete's.com. That's P-E-E-T-S.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, January 11th, 2006, and this is the KBOO Morning News. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Carlos Chavez.
Coming up on this program, PGE has agreed to refund taxes paid by Multnomah County residents. Lawmakers in Britain ordered two men face charges for leaking a memo that describes George Bush's plan to bomb the Al Jazeera News Service's headquarters. And Israel is pulling the plug on television evangelist Pat Robertson. Weather for today calls for more rain, temperatures in the mid-50s. There's still a flood watch in effect for northwest Oregon and southwest Washington. The time is 7:02.
Portland General Electric has settled a class action lawsuit with a tentative agreement to refund taxes paid by Multnomah County customers. Under the agreement announced today, PGE will pay $10 million to fund 7 years of refunds at 9% interest plus attorney fees. Current and former Multnomah County residents who paid the tax on their PGE bill anytime from 1999 and last year are eligible for a refund with interest. Current customers will receive the refund automatically on their PGE bills. A lawsuit was filed last January. The settlement still has to be approved by a Multnomah County judge.
Portland students told the school board that plans to require uniform attire and educate some boys and girls in separate buildings would unfairly isolate Jefferson High School students. About 20 Jefferson High students attended the regular board meeting where Superintendent Vicki Phillips formally presented a community team's plan to raise achievement at the North Portland High School and the schools that feed into it. Phillips and the design team unveiled their plans at a community meeting in late December. Nearly two dozen people testified, most against the proposals. About half were adults, many of them from the Neighborhood Schools Alliance. The group formed last year in opposition to school closures. Members have called elements of the proposal racist because they would impose uniform attire on the predominantly African-American students at Jefferson and create single-sex schools, a structure that exists nowhere else in the district. Many of the students at Monday's meeting hooted when an overhead projector showed a picture of students from Texas who wore similar outfits to school. Several students opposed to some of the plans that supported other parts, such as proposals to increase tutoring and strengthen partnerships with colleges. This from the Oregonian.
U.S. District Judge Marsha Peckman ruled this week that the U.S. Forest Service is breaking the law by logging in national forests without surveying for rare wildlife. The ruling will halt over 140 logging projects on public land in the Northwest and reinstate the survey and manage program that was removed by the Bush administration. On the phone this morning, we have Alex P. Brown, Executive Director of BARC, the Portland-based watchdog group that focuses on federal land agencies' forest management. Good morning and welcome to KBOO, Alex.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
was wondering if you could talk about the ruling and explain what this will do for our old growth forests here in the Northwest.
Sure. The Survey and Manage program was created in 1994 by the Forest Service as a part of the Northwest Forest Plan. It simply required the Forest Service to take precautions when logging forests where rare plants and animals may exist. In 2004, as you noted, the Bush administration removed this rule. It was found that the Forest Service wasn't complying with it anyway, so the resulting action was to simply remove the protections in the first place. What happened yesterday was that the judge found that the Bush administration's deal with the timber industry to remove the Survey and Manage program was in fact illegal. Today, once again, we have common sense brought back to our national forest system. Here on the Mount Hood National Forest, BARC is concerned that the timber industry is being provided with taxpayer-subsidized access at all. But of the 50 or so logging projects that we are tracking on the Mount Hood National Forest, about 10 of them are going to be affected by this ruling.
How long do you think this ruling is going to hold off the timber industry's advancement of logging in this region?
Well, it's certainly no surprise that the Bush administration and the timber industry have been working together to remove protections just like the Survey and Manage program. So we don't know how long it's going to last. We know that as long as the Forest Service is required to take these common sense precautions before logging in the Mount Hood National Forest, that at the very least the older, more pristine forests are going to be protected. And, of course, you can count on BARC to watch everything that happens on the Mount Hood National Forest and keep these forests safe from bad logging projects.
What would you say is the next step in protecting our forests and wildlife in this area?
Well, the next step is to simply make sure that people are out in the forest. I grew up here in Portland. I spent my childhood playing in the Mount Hood National Forest. And when it comes right down to it, there's no better way to ensure that these forests are protected than to get out there and see what the Forest Service is doing. And that's certainly what BARC is trying to help folks get out and do. So as long as we're watching, we're going to know what's happening, and hopefully we're going to see better protections for the Mount Hood.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Alex.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. That was Alex P. Brown, the executive director of BARC, an environmental watchdog group based here in Portland.
And we have a series of reports about Tryon Farms and their fundraising efforts. KBOO's Jim Thompson reports.
So good evening. I'm speaking with Lee Callen of the Tryon Farms. We have been reporting on their fundraising efforts to try to secure their property, and I know that they've been at risk. So we're talking with Lee Callen. Lee, how are you?
I'm great.
You're great. You have good news, I hope.
Yes, we have very good news.
Well, let's hear it.
Well, we went down to the title company today at 11 a.m., signed all of the papers that we needed to sign, have all of the money that we need, $1.425 million
wow.
in an escrow account waiting to transfer to the landowners. So we have fulfilled our end of the deal. We did it.
You did it. What's the atmosphere? What's the mood like there? I can't imagine.
Oh my gosh. Very relieved, a little bit tired, I have to say. And we're preparing for a press conference tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. So, yeah, we sent out a press advisory. I'm actually right now writing up a big email to the world, telling everyone to celebrate. And we're just kind of, I mean,
You're kind of
work mode here.
Okay. How long has this process been going on?
Whoa. I guess I would say about 2 years has been the vision and work towards creating this education center has been about 2 years. It's only been about 10 months of fundraising. Yeah.
And in 10 months you raised a lot of money for a wonderful adventure.
I would like to make it clear that the reason that we have all of that money, one, is because there has been an incredible amount of community support every single day, just pouring in. So I just want to thank people profusely, and I'm just in awe of the Portland community at the moment. We also had some last-minute bridge loans that allowed us to come up with the final $15,000 that we were short yesterday. So we are still fundraising to cover those bridge loans and pay back the short-term loans that we did receive yesterday.
Ah, that's good to know.
So just so everyone knows, we're still fundraising.
Okay. Thank you so much for this note, and all the best.
Thank you so much, Jim.
For KBOO, I'm Jim Thompson.
The project on emerging nanotechnologies at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars today released a new report by one of the country's foremost authorities on environmental research and policy. The report examines the strengths and weaknesses of the current regulatory framework for nanotechnology and calls for a new approach to nanotechnology oversight. The report argues that better and more aggressive oversight and new resources are needed to manage the potential adverse effects of nanotechnology and promote its continued development. The principal author of the paper says it's the right time to come up with the right regulatory framework for nanotechnology, a framework that encourages initiative and innovation while also protecting the public and environment. But the author allows this won't be easy. Some current regulatory approaches may work for nanotechnology applications. The FDA has the authority it needs to review and regulate nanotechnology applications in the areas of drugs and biomedical devices. But most of the existing applicable programs are seriously flawed, lack resources, and require new thinking and funding.
Space tourists must be screened to ensure they're not terrorists, according to proposed regulations from the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration. The draft report's suggestions aim to prevent a terrorist from destroying a spacecraft or using it as a weapon. But the report has no strict proposals on the health of any of the would-be space tourists. The suggestions will affect Sir Richard Branson's enterprise, which aims to launch people into space this decade. The Federal Aviation Administration is attempting to regulate the commercial space industry in a bid to ensure minimum safety standards. It's recommended security checks similar to those for airline passengers, this according to the BBC. The FAA also suggests space tourism companies check the global no-fly list from the U.S. Homeland Security Department to exclude potential terrorists. The FAA has so far left any medical requirements in the hands of the tourist, who should decide themselves if they're fit to fly. The draft regulations could come into force soon, as the first space tourists have already made it into low Earth orbit around the Earth without their box cutters.
Former head of the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq, Paul Bremer, says that senior U.S. military officials tried to make him a fall guy for post-war setbacks. This from the Financial Times. In a recently published memoir, Bremer portrays himself in a constant struggle with the Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and military leaders who were determined to reduce the U.S. troop presence as quickly as possible in 2004, despite the escalating insurgency. Also, he writes how Rumsfeld was clearly unhappy that Condoleezza Rice, then National Security Advisor, had taken control of Iraq policy from the Pentagon in late 2003. A Pentagon spokesman confirmed that Bremer had sent Rumsfeld a memo based on a report by the RAND Corporation consultancy that recommended 500,000 U.S. troops would be needed to invade Iraq. But Bremer's advice was rejected by military leaders and Rumsfeld. What the diary clearly shows is that there was no detailed post-war reconstruction plan, that the U.S. lacked decent intelligence to deal with an insurgency it failed to predict, and the naivety of the Americans who were shocked at the dismissal at the dismal state of Iraq's economy and infrastructure after years of sanctions. Bremer accuses Pentagon officials of setting him up to take the fall for the post-war failures in Iraq, even though the decision to disband the Army was personally approved by Paul Wolfowitz, the Deputy Defense Secretary, and cleared by Rumsfeld and President George W. Bush.
A new study has determined that the Bush administration's original estimate of the cost of the war in Iraq may be radically lower than the actual long-term cost. Quinn Bowman reports from Washington, D.C.
Economists Joseph Stiglitz and Linda Bilmes determined that the war may cost up to $2 trillion. The pair included factors the U.S. government has not included in their overall price tag for the war, like the cost of providing health care to injured or maimed soldiers, the increase in the U.S. deficit, and the funds needed to recruit new soldiers, as well as the rise in oil prices. Although the White House estimated the war could cost between $100 and $200 billion, Stiglitz says that even the study's estimate is a conservative one.
To take a very conservative approach, we assumed only $5 of the increases due to the war in Iraq. I think a more reasonable number is a substantially higher fraction of the increase in the cost of oil is due to the war in Iraq. And that, if you did that, you would wind up with a much higher number.
The study, which Stiglitz says was purposely conservative in order to stifle charges that he was exaggerating the findings, assumes that U.S. troop levels in Iraq will decrease every year until a full withdrawal in 2010. Report co-author Linda Bilmes is a Harvard lecturer, while Joseph Stiglitz is the 2001 Nobel laureate in economics. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Quinn Bowman in Washington, D.C.
The U.S. has rejected a call by the German Chancellor Angela Merkel for the closure of its detention camp at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. State Department spokesman Sean McCormick said the camp keeps society safe from very dangerous people who would fight the U.S. if released. Chancellor Merkel said the camp should not exist days before her visit to the U.S. since taking office. Human rights campaigners have expressed growing concern about the treatment of inmates at Guantanamo Bay. The U.S. has denied allegations that it tortures prisoners at the camp. McCormick said everybody hoped there would come a point where Guantanamo would not be needed, but that point had not come yet. Merkel's comments come as Germany hopes to improve relations with the U.S., which were strained after former Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder opposed the Iraq War. At a news conference on Saturday, Merkel defended her comments, but said she would not demand the immediate closure of the camp in talks with George Bush next week. This according to the BBC.
Thanks, Carlos. And we've got more on Gitmo from Amnesty International this time. Amnesty International has released new claims of alleged torture and ill treatment of detainees being taken to Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. This from the Herald Sun. The testimonies from three men echo similar claims made by released prisoners and include allegations from one of the men that he was abducted by the CIA as part of its extraordinary rendition policy. Amnesty says that one detainee was allegedly disappeared in 2002 after traveling to Egypt for a meeting with a construction firm. He was shackled, blindfolded, gagged, and put on a small private plane, taken to Afghanistan, where he was held in secret, illegally, and incommunicado for 2 years. He suffered psychological torture at 5 prisons in or around Kabul, a number of them underground, before being transferred to Guantanamo Bay in 2004. The human rights group said he wrote in a letter smuggled out of jail in Afghanistan that stated the CIA conspired with the Egyptian Mukhabarat Intelligence Service. Washington has denied using or condoning torture, but defended renditions as a vital tool in combating international terrorism. Amnesty International called for increased pressure to be put on the U.S. government for the prisoners to be either released or given a fair trial, and repeated its view that Guantanamo should be shut down and an inquiry launched into the torture claims.
The National Security Agency whistleblower Russell Tice worked for 20 years helping the United States spy on other people's conversations around the world, and now says some of the operations were illegal. This from the ABC News. Tice told ABC News that some of the secret black world operations run by the NSA were operated in ways that he believes violated the law, and he's prepared to tell Congress all he knows about the alleged wrongdoing in these programs run by the Defense Department and the NSA. Tice says the technology exists to track and sort through every domestic and international phone call as they are switched through centers such as one in New York, and to search for keyword words or phrases. Intelligence analysts use the information to develop graphs that resemble spider webs linking one suspect's phone number to hundreds or even thousands more. Bush has admitted that he gave orders that allowed the NSA to eavesdrop on a small number of Americans without usual requisite warrants, but Tice says the number of Americans subject to eavesdropping by the NSA could be in the millions if the full range of secret NSA programs is used. The NSA revoked TISA's security clearance in last May based on what is called psychological concerns and later dismissed him. Tice calls that bunk and says that the way the NSA says that that's the way the NSA deals with troublemakers and whistleblowers.
A British court ordered two men to face trial on charges of leaking a memo that a lawmaker said described a plan by U.S. President George Bush to bomb Arabic television station Al Jazeera. This from Reuters. The defendants, David Kill and Leo O'Connor, face a preliminary hearing on January 24th on charges of breaking the Official Secrets Act, and their lawyers are pushing for the secret document to be disclosed. The White House called the charges outlandish, and Blair denied receiving details of any U.S. proposal to bomb Al Jazeera. Britain's Attorney General has warned media that they will be breaking the law if they publish details of the document. In 2001, the Al Jazeera's office in Afghanistan was hit by U.S. bombs, and in 2003, Al Jazeera reporter Tariq Ayoub was killed in a U.S. strike on its Baghdad office, but the U.S. has denied targeting the station.
A former British general has called for the impeachment proceedings for Tony Blair, accusing the British Prime Minister of misleading Parliament over the Iraq War, according to The Guardian. General Sir Michael Rose said Blair should be impeached for going to war on Iraq on a false basis, and that he had to be held account for his actions. General Rose reiterated that most of the British people had consistently opposed the Prime Minister's unwise decision to join George W. Bush in his illegal war against Iraq. Rose also stated that members of Parliament supported the war decision simply because Blair had stressed the argument about Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction, which were never found. He also called on MPs to investigate just how far the Prime Minister went to evaluate the quality of the intelligence about the weapons allegations. Rose moreover stressed that he would have resigned had he been in office at the time of the invasion, as it might have caused the politicians to think twice about what they were doing.
Bolivia's president-elect Evo Morales is in South Africa on the latest leg of his world tour ahead of his inauguration in January. Morales said South Africa's struggle against apartheid was similar to the political struggle in Bolivia. He's due to meet South African President Thabo Mbeki tomorrow. He said that he also hopes to meet his hero, Nelson Mandela. The Bolivian leader arrived in South Africa from China, where he appealed to business leaders to help him use Bolivia's big reserves of gas to alleviate poverty. He has already visited several European and Latin American countries ahead of his inauguration. Bolivia's indigenous majority live mostly in poverty, governed by centuries by a wealthy minority, predominantly of Spanish and European extraction. Morales is the first indigenous person ever to be head of state in that country. Morales has vowed not to forget the people who put him in power, and he said he will take a pay cut of 50% when he takes office. He says the pay cut will go to help pay the salaries of new teachers. This from the BBC.
China's foreign minister left today a tour of six African nations. The trip underscores Beijing's accelerating economic and diplomatic presence in a region whose energy and national resources it covets. China already gets a third of its oil from Africa. China has been looking at energy-rich nations as it seeks new sources of imports to fuel its fast-growing economy. China's top offshore oil producer, CNOOC, agreed last week to pay $2.3 billion for a stake in a Nigerian oil and gas field. This is the company's largest ever overseas acquisition. Today in Nigeria, China's foreign minister will sign a memorandum of understanding that would pave the way for further economic cooperation. He shrugged off concerns about Nigeria's poor record on human rights and corruption, this according to Reuters.
In India, leftist parties will organize protest demonstrations against American policies during U.S. President George Bush's proposed visit to the country next month. The Communist Party of India's National Secretary D. Raja said left parties have decided to organize a country-wide campaign against U.S. policies during Bush's visit to India. He told the Times of India that the campaign against the president's visit would culminate in big rallies all across the country.
According to the BBC, Iran's dispute with the UN and Western countries has deepened after Tehran resumed nuclear research, as Iran removed UN seals from equipment at Natanz facility. UN nuclear chief Mohammad al-Baradei said Tehran would start small-scale nuclear enrichment. The move was condemned by the U.S. and European countries, which fear Iran is seeking to produce atomic bombs. Tehran denies the accusation, saying it wants to produce nuclear energy only. El-Baradei says that as well as breaking the international seals on its atomic research center in Natanz, Iran would remove seals on two other connected sites. Iran's latest move is expected to trigger an emergency meeting of the IAEA's Board of Governors.
Israel is pulling the plug on American televangelist Pat Robertson. A spokesman for the tourism minister says Israel is furious with Robertson over his suggestion that Prime Minister Sharon's stroke was punishment from God for giving up Gaza. Israel's anger could jeopardize a $50 million Christian Heritage Center planned in Israel by an evangelist group headed by Robertson. Israel had planned to provide the land for free. The spokesman says Israel will do business with other evangelical leaders regarded as friends, but no longer with Robertson.
Foreign secretaries from Central America, Mexico, the Dominican Republic, and Colombia have issued a joint declaration calling for a more pragmatic approach to the question of immigration enforcement. Vladimir Flores has the story.
The foreign secretaries are meeting in Mexico City to construct a regional consensus regarding immigration policy. This after the U.S. House of Representatives passed controversial legislation in December. The bill calls for the expansion of the metal wall along the U.S.-Mexico border and will classify the act of working without proper documentation as a felony. The measure has sparked widespread criticism in Mexico, where the border wall is seen as a symbol of xenophobia and irrational immigration policy. Although exact numbers are unknown, an estimated 4 million Mexicans live and work in the U.S. without legal documentation. Money sent back by workers in their form of remittances is Mexico's second largest source of revenue. The U.S. Senate is expected to debate the House-approved immigration bill in February. Oaxaca, Mexico, Vladimir Flores, Free Speech, Radio News.
That's the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, January 11th, 2006. Weather for today calls for more rain with temperatures in the mid-50s. You're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kbu.fm. Our producer for this morning's newscast is Brian Smith. Our assistant producer is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Boone Rivas. The KBOO Morning News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Carlos Chavez.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up later this morning on KBOO at 7:30, Barbara Bernstein hosts Locus Focus Talk Radio with more on the Abramoff scandal and Bush's imperial presidency, as reflected in the Alito hearings. At 9, it's a special one-hour version of Movie Talk, looking at the best and worst movies of 2005. At 10, Andrew Geller begins a series on fascism in the United States with Larry Britt, author of Fascism Anyone, which defines 14 common characteristics of seven fascist states in history. At 10:30, the guest Nora Erekat, a legal advocate with the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. She'll discuss a campaign to get the Caterpillar company to cease its bulldozer sales to Israel. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. That's all right here on KBOO, your community non-corporate, volunteer-sponsored and listener-sponsored radio station. And be sure to catch the KBOO Evening News at 5 p.m. Thanks for joining us.
is the community calendar for Wednesday, January 11th. The Portland Parks and Recreation is holding a community budget meeting tonight from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Benson High School cafeteria. The address is 546 Northeast 12th Avenue in Portland. Portland Parks and Recreation wants to learn what the community feels is important for the City Council to consider. For more information about tonight's meeting, call 503-823-5300. 50 years ago, Rosa Parks' simple act of defiance against racial segregation on city buses ignited the modern civil rights movement. Tonight, Vancouver for Peace will be showing the film The Legacy of Rosa Parks. The doors open this evening at 6:45 p.m., show starts at 7, and will be held at the Marshall Elementary School. The address is 6400 MacArthur Boulevard in Vancouver, Washington. The film is suitable for middle school children and older, and a discussion will be held following. For more information, email vancouverforpeace@ELLISONKA@yahoo.com. Holt International, an international adoption agency, will be holding a free information meeting tonight from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. The meeting is for those interested in adopting a daughter or son from China, India, Thailand, or many other countries where Holt has programs. The meeting will be held at Holt International Children's Services at 9320 Southwest Barber Boulevard, Suite 100 in Portland, Oregon. For more information, call Kathy Stalker at 503-244-2440. The African American Tobacco Prevention and Education Network will be meeting on Thursday, January 12th from 12 noon to 1:15 p.m. to develop questions for a tobacco retail advertising tool for a survey that will be conducted by local youth. This meeting is open to all ages and will be held at the Talking Drum Coffee Shop and Bookstore, 446 Northeast Killingsworth Street in Portland. Please RSVP by calling 503-288-8066, extension 3011. Thanks for listening to the KBOO Community Calendar for Wednesday, January 11th. This is Alicia Olson for KBOO in Portland, Hood River, and Corvallis.
Hi, I'm J.J. Johnson, the host of Jay's Place on KBOO Radio. I would like to invite you to the Martin Luther King Celebration, Friday, January 13th, and again on Monday, the 16th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., we'll have street interviews. You can call in and give your opinions live on air about the Civil Rights Movement and Dr. King. Listen to great gospel music and hear some of Dr. King's famous speeches, I Have a Dream, On the Mountaintop, and more. So tune in Friday, January the 13th, and Monday, January the 16th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., and help us celebrate Dr. King's life. This is why we say we want to be your community voice and your musical choice.
This is Ed Goldberg, host of Movie Talk. On the coming show, January 11th, we'll have an hour from 9 to 10 a.m. doing our annual Best and Worst show. It'll be me, DK Holm, and Don Taylor with our list of best and worst, and a few others, maybe best documentary, like that. So what'll it be? Will it be I Love You, You Big Ape, or will it be Hey Cowboy, New in Town? Whatever it is, you can tune in and give us your ideas of the best and worst of 2005. Next Wednesday, January 11th, 9 to 10 a.m., the best and worst of 2005 on KBOO Portland.